So you're known around New Orleans as St. Wendell for all of your rebuilding efforts. And I was just wondering if that means you've stopped swearing.
First of all, I don't know how true that is. I think somebody kind of may have mentioned it, and now people have picked up on it. But I doubt I'm known as St. Wendell by many.
Okay.
No, I have not stopped swearing. Yes, it's all about turns. We're in a place where, you know, especially in New Orleans, is one of those things where, if not now, when?
Mm-hmm.
If not me, who? It's so clear that that we are in, you know, we are still in a crisis mode mm-hmm. when it comes to the recovery of the city. It was inevitable that I had to get involved, and I wanted to be able to answer some young kid in the future who says, Mr. Pierce, what did you do in the darkest hours? I want to have a proud answer.
Mm-hmm. And what inspired you to start Sterling Farms?
As I was bringing back Pontchartrain Park, the neighborhood that I grew up in, and I put together this redevelopment of housing, solar and geothermal,
mm-hmm.
had to incentivize people to come back, I realized it's on me to kind of get off the sidelines. So, I, you know, knew about food deserts, and then the First Lady's attention, Michelle Obama, her the attention that she brought to food deserts,
mm-hmm.
communities, you know, in America, one of the richest countries in the world, in the history of the world, having communities where people have to go over a half an hour to 45 minutes to get to fresh produce and food is unacceptable. And, you know, in the most abundant country in the world to know that, you know, their kids that are, you know, going to go hungry tonight. That was unacceptable to me, and I feel as though the two can coexist, that you actually can be a successful business by filling that need. Classic economy 101, fill the need. There is the demand, supply and demand.
And speaking of trying to encourage fresh and local food consumption, you know, the other day I saw a giant bus ad, Chicken McNuggets, 20 for $4.99. You know, that's a quart, that's 25 cents a pop. You know, it's pretty hard to compete with that.
But you have to compete with it. Everybody says, look, how are you going to compete with all these fast food, these low choices? There's nothing else competing with them. They have a monopoly in the community. So,
right. So
that's the challenge. You have to make it affordable. That is the key for our success. Sterling Farms is going to be competitive when it comes to pricing. At the same time, give people a decent living wage. There's going to be a sense of it being your store because we're going to be first source hiring from the community. We're going to do cooking demonstrations mm-hmm. in the store. We're going to have a farmer of the month in the stores. And then there's going to be the monthly cookout or in New Orleans, you know, crawfish boil, where the community actually gets to prepare meals for sale. Now, at the same time, the sale of those meals will go to something that the community determines is worthy. And I think with that community actively participating in the store and having access to those foods and actually having chefs come in to show you how to prepare good, healthy meals and at the same time have access to affordable, healthy choices, I'll compete with the Nuggets, you know?
Well, we sure could use your stores. I mean, I'm just thinking of my neighborhood in Oakland, California. I mean, do you have a plan or a vision to go national?
First, you have to crawl before you walk and walk before you run. You know the old adage.
Mm-hmm.
What we want to do is, in our first year, really get the store up and running and in the communities in New Orleans because that's where we're starting. We have had inquiries from different communities nationwide. This will be the template. You know, we're going to have to make sure that it works, and then as it develops, we'll definitely hope to branch out. We've had inquiries from just even within the southeastern region of the country, and if past behavior is the best predictor of the future, all our competitors will still stay out of the neighborhoods
mm-hmm.
in Oakland, you know, in East Bay, and in Southside Chicago, and, you know, the lower ninth ward of New Orleans, and Pensacola, And all of those communities that we know are underserved, Southeast Washington, D.C., even if we show them the success that we can be, there's so little respect for the community by American Enterprise that they'll sit on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. See, I'm not the first. Magic Johnson has shown American right. business that it can be done, you know? One of the number one stores, Starbucks never gives out franchises, but they gave one to Magic Johnson, said, bring it to Harlem, you know. And Magic Johnson's pitch was, you know, poor black folks will buy $5 cups of coffee, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the biggest stores in New York.
Right.
You know, one of the biggest movie theaters in Los Angeles, the hub of Hollywood, is the Magic Johnson Theaters in the Crenshaw District. And so Magic Johnson has built an enterprise showing them that, hey, listen, in these underserved communities and these poorer communities, there's consumers, and they buy your products, and they're willing to come to you just like any other customer if you have a desire to bring your product there. And even with Magic Johnson showing them the success of it, American Enterprise has still stayed on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be those who decide to go into those communities who have respect for the community, respect for the consumers in those communities that are going to do well. And Sterling Farms is going to be one of those stores.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're a big sports fan. How big a role can sports play in the recovery and spirit of a community? I mean, you'd think it could only go so far, but what with the Saints have done and Friday Night
Lights.
What's
happening in Detroit?
Yeah.
Yeah, listen, it is the power of a sports team in a community. It's almost indescribable. I'm a big Saints fan. The NFL is such a large, multi-billion-dollar enterprise with fan loyalty because they have provided not only entertainment for its fans, but it's provided memories, good memories, family memories to its fans that can only bring about goodwill. And so what happens is when you have a sports team doing well in a city that's going through tough times, like New Orleans, like Detroit, it bolsters this real sentiment of we can get through this.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have that sentiment, it becomes more than feelings. It's transported into action. Translated in New Orleans was volunteerism went up. People were supportive of each other's neighborhoods. People were have never gone to the Lower Ninth Ward, went to the Lower Ninth Ward, got involved. People became active. They were feeling good. There was a sense of community. And that is something that's why I'm an artist. That's the role of an artist, man. You know, what thoughts are to the individual, art is to the community as a whole. It's where you reflect on who you are, who you hope to be, you know, what you've gone through and where you hope to go. That's why you do art. It's a tangible thing that inspires people into action, feeling that is transported into action. And it's the same thing with those sports teams. The Saints make you feel good. You see the communal spirit on Sunday afternoon. You know that can be translated into a communal spirit of activism, of knowing that person is just like me because we share the same passion about that sports team. Someone who I thought was totally different, you know, that guy with the white-collar job sitting next to the woman who was a blue-collar worker, works on the docks, and someone who works in a bank, actually have a common goal and a sense of, you know, a shared purpose. And then they understand that this can be translated past Sunday afternoon. And it really does have an impact on the psyche of a city. And when you have that impact on the psyche, it's translated into action.
Mm-hmm. And growing up in a place so alive like New Orleans, did that have a big impact on you becoming an artist?
Yeah. New Orleans, more than many places I know, actually tangibly live its culture. It's not just a residual of life, it's a part of life. It's our music is at every major milestone of our life. Birth, marriage, death, it's our culture, you know. And culture is the intersection between people and dealing with the journey of life itself, how to deal with life, how a people deals with life is literally manifested in its culture, in its food, in its music, in its art, in the way you dance, the way you communicate. And New Orleans always has culture in its everyday living. We sing when we talk, "Hey, baby, how you doing? What's going on, little folly?" You know, you sing when you speak to each other. The whole idea of jazz came about with the interpretation of the human dialogue, trading forwards. When someone's soloing and then someone picks up the solo and plays it back at them, it was the imitation of human dialogue. It was the first place where people could, you know, it was how people spoke through music. When you look at the beginnings of jazz in Congo Square, these captured Africans who couldn't say anything to their captors. So they take their captors' European music, oom-pa-pa, oom-pa-pa, and they combine it with their African six, and then you have jazz. And it's saying, "I'm taking what you've done. Look at what you're doing to me. Look at my comment back to it." So it's the expression of what you're going through in life, which is a part of the culture. And in New Orleans, that's every day. And so that made me a student of human behavior. You know, look at Miss Ann. Oh, Mr. Jones crazy. You know, oh, I would love to do that. That's an adventure I would love to have. Why does that hurt that person? And so that curiosity about the human experience, that's exactly what actors are. We are students of the human behavior. I was around the creativity of food. You know, when we call and ask someone, how was their day? They always say, "Oh, it was good. I had roast chicken with collard greens, and I did an etouffee." They would start talking about the food because we don't live to eat. I mean, we don't eat to live. We live to eat, you know, because that's a part of the creativity of the day. So people speak about their meals as if it's this wonderful creation that they have, they've made. You know, "Oh, I had a great day, man. You should have seen what I cooked." You know, and it's a communal sharing thing. Here's the pot. And that's across the board. Our social aid and pleasure clubs culturally came out of the fact that black folks in segregation could not get burial plots, could not get into hospitals, weren't allowed. They were redlined by insurance companies. So they put together the social aid and pleasure clubs to do second lines. If your mother takes sick, this group will put together the money to make sure that she's taken care of. If your father dies, we're going to send him off nice. That's the evolution of that's the evolution of the jazz funeral. You have an umbrella and a handkerchief because it's hot, and we're going to follow the family to the cemetery. They're the first line, we're the second line. Take the music in and with a dirge, and when we leave, we're going to celebrate his life. We're going to leave with some up-tempo dance music and dance all the way back home. And so that is how culture literally becomes a part of civic activism. We're not allowed in your hospitals. We're not allowed in even your burial plots and cemeteries. We're going to pool our money together and make sure that we take care of each other in a communal way. That is the culture of New Orleans. That's the reason I'm an artist.
And what's it been like working with David Simon on two series now?
David Simon is a brilliant writer, and he's brilliant at being able to take what is ordinary and make it extraordinary. He's celebrating people's lives by pointing out that our lives aren't arbitrary. That's why people connect with his characters so freely and so easy. He finds the extraordinary in the ordinary. And he's also very good at coming into a community and being able to see the brilliance in what people in that community take for granted, and he's able to share that universally. You know, you look at The Wire, you never look at some kids slinging drugs on the corner the same. You never be just indifferent to them. And it's the same way with New Orleans. He's able to come in and say, "Let me show you what the people were going through. not some tragedy on CNN. You know, it's not just some tragedy that you're seeing on 24-hour news. It's actually their lives behind this that are going to be impacted for generations to come. And let me show you how, in spite of everything, these people's culture was so important to them that it is the thing that they fell back onto to give them strength to deal with the hurdles and challenges in front of them. And that's the brilliance of David Simon. He's able to show that humanity, the extraordinary and the ordinary, and be able to come into a community like Baltimore, the drug world of Baltimore, the politics of Baltimore, into the cultural world of New Orleans, the aftermath of major disaster, and make a comment on people's lives from just the very simple, but then have profoundly moving statements about the decay of cities, about the evilness of keeping whole peoples underclass in this country, the moral ambiguity that's happening in the country and in our society, the breakdown of urban America. He can make comments about those broad themes with very simple, ordinary acts of everyday people done in extraordinary ways. That's his brilliance.
And Tremé is set in your hometown. Antoine must be a very personal role for you.
It's a seesaw of emotions. Part of me is like, oh, my God, I got to go back and fight that fight. You so identify with the difficulties of the recovery of New Orleans, and it's so real, and it's become so much a part of my life that I forget at times that I'm just a television actor, but it's so real for me that I wouldn't want to be anyplace else. It's art imitating life and life imitating art, and it's beyond the job. It's gone really majorly beyond a job. It is something that will always be a marked period in my life. I can almost imagine what it was like to rebuild Europe after World War II, what it must have been like... the devastation of Native Americans after Trail of Tears, and trying to say how can we keep our tribe together? How can we keep our culture together after our land has been stolen, our lives have been devastated? You know, so I know that in the whole span of human history, American history specifically, but human history, it is something that I'm not alone in. I'm not the first to go through it.
You know, with all the so much redevelopment in New Orleans, is this the city at risk of losing its unique flair?
Yeah, because there are those who are trying to, there are those who don't want the city to come back the way it is. There are those who want to get rid of poor, who want to make sure that to get rid of, not make it a black city again. So you have to fight those fights, you know. Listen, we had someone who openly on the front page of the Wall Street Journal said, Katrina's the thing ever happened because we're going to be able to get rid of people we don't want. You see this so-called experiment of the charter school system. John McDonald, we call it John Mack, one of the toughest schools prior to the storm. It's actually where they had a double murder with the AK-47 in the gym. Tough school, came back. The state has taken over the education system, you know. And now we have the state superintendent saying, unless you give this school over to a charter school, I won't appropriate the money to renovate John McDonough. So that's extortion. And people say, well, why? Wendell, why wouldn't you want those poor kids in that neighborhood? John McDonough, I said, because there's nothing in the new policies that guarantees the neighborhood kids get to go to their neighborhood school. Under the guise of open admissions, there are prerequisites. There are qualifiers. And when there are qualifiers, that's not open admissions. And it's upside down. It's upside down. It's focusing on all those students who can take advantage of the choice of vouchers and the choice of charter schools. But what if it's a kid who doesn't have responsible parents? Who doesn't come from a really great home? And we say, well, tough luck. And I've had people tell me, well, what about personal responsibility? I said, when he becomes 18 or she becomes 18, yes, personal responsibility. Until then, they are at the mercy of those subpar parents, the subpar people around them. That's not the role of public education. My mother was a teacher for 40 years. She was a part of UTNO, United Teachers of New Orleans. The water hadn't even receded out of New Orleans yet. People were still on their rooftops, waving, waiting to be rescued. And the priority that the state takes is to get rid of all the teachers. Mm-hmm. Fired all the teachers, a predominantly African-American female union. Mm-hmm. Shut down overnight. All right, I'm going to get off my soapbox. I'm talking to Mother Jones.
I don't know, though. It sounds to me like you should be Mayor Wendell.
That's not about mayor.
Maybe down the road.
It can be difficult. I choose to try to do those things that's
right.
necessary.
Right.
You know?
And
from outside in.
Right. And your role in Treme, and you taught yourself to play the trombone, is that right?
How you doing? Well, yes, I'm learning how to play the trombone right now. I wouldn't call myself a musician. They still record.
Well, how do you go about? Have you ever played a musical instrument, like when you were growing up or anything?
In New Orleans, you always grab every kid at least grabs a trumpet for a week. I made it to 2 weeks.
And how do you typically prepare for roles, like for Antoine or for B.B. King? What's your process? Or Bunk, for that matter.
Yeah, it's really just complete immersion into the world. With Bunk, I actually hung out with the real Bunk, Detective Sassy, homicide detective in Baltimore. I was just honored to be with them, you know. And I did ride-alongs, interrogations, going to crime scenes, all of that. You ask those personal questions, you know, about why they became police officers, what's important to them, and you kind of combine that with your own creations in the role, try to make it as hot as possible for you. You know, not that, ooh, I always wanted to be a detective, mm-hmm. and that's great. No, I wanted to be a detective because this neighborhood was a neighborhood I grew up in, you know, and it doesn't reflect the people that I know in the neighborhood. That I became a detective because I wanted, you know, to change. I wanted to get out that 1%, you know, mm-hmm. who are making it, you know, awful for everybody else. You know, that small element of crime that is overwhelmingly, disproportionately affecting good, hardworking people. And you combine that with your ideas I discovered across the board specifically why African-American men became detectives, became police officers. Mm-hmm. It didn't reflect the neighborhood they knew they grew up in because they grew up there, you know, mm-hmm. and how they, at many of the times, know the exact criminals they're going to be chasing. And that was reflected in The Wire at one point, you know, with Bunk and Omar. So when it comes to New Orleans, I grew up with so many musicians, Wynton and Branford Marsalis, Terrence Blanchard, Donald Harrison, Harry Connick Jr., big fan of Rebirth Brass Band and Kermit Ruffins and all when I would go home. And actually, you know, they are a part of the show. So to research Antoine was a lot easier.
And what do you think you'd be doing now if you weren't acting?
If I wasn't acting, I would be another artist in a different field. I have, you know, so much love for art. In America, we've lost the sense of what is important about art. As I said before, you know, we know about the entertainment part. That's a residual of great art. That's not the sole purpose of it. The purpose of it is the place where we as a community reflect on our journey, you know, why we're here, what we hope to be, our faults, our strengths, our inadequacies, you know, our triumphs, mm-hmm. The best part of it. What thoughts are to the individual as you lie awake in bed at night and wonder about your life and reflect on your life, what those are to the individual, art is to the community as a whole. Doing Treme, you see the power of art because all around the city of New Orleans, there's watch parties. People talk about it in a different way on Monday. And it helps them deal with the recovery that they're in the midst of, because it's someone actually recognizing what we've gone through just a few short years ago. You know, we're about 4 years in front of the actual show itself, and so it just lets you know that you've actually, although you may not feel it, you have made some progress, that there's some reflection on what you've done, what you've gone through, how much further you have to go. And you couldn't get a better example of that than on Sunday night in New Orleans, where all over the city people are watching the show of Treme, and it's almost like a group therapy session. That's the power of art.
And you recently saw the movie The Help with your mother, I believe. And
yes.
You called it, I think on Twitter, Segregation Light. It struck a pretty personal chord in you, yes?
The movie is touching. It's well done. But it struck a chord in me that my mother, who lived through it, segregation, who had seen the pain of having someone burn out someone's home and car because they bought a car. You know, a nigga wasn't supposed to own a new car. So the reason I grew up in New Orleans is my mother from Assumption Parish had to come to New Orleans because that was the closest school for anyone, any black person. You know, there was no school for black kids in her parish, no high schools. You know, you can only go to the city, and Booker T. Washington was the only school that you were allowed to go to. I mean, you have to realize the depth and the evilness of segregation, that people died, you know. I just did a play in New York, a reading of a play about George Denny Jr., who was the youngest person executed in the United States at 14 in 1944 for killing two white girls, and they coerced a false confession out of him by offering the kid ice cream, which he loved. You know, to know that, you know, to have his family sitting there knowing that this was a real person who was executed just a generation ago. A little 14-year-old black kid lost his life because of that evilness. And so when you look at The Help, it was a well-done movie. Everyone was in tears in the theater, but I looked and saw my mother, and she was just seething, you know. And she's like, she told me something that I'd never heard before. She's like, when I was in college, my summer job, I was the help. And I couldn't eat in the home. I had to go outside. And I realized that all of that was in the movie. And she said, as bad as it was and as it was depicted there, it can't compare to how awful it was, you know. It was an emotional roller coaster to watch the movie with my mother, and to see her anger and pain after the movie. I knew that was a palatable, easy way to kind of make a comment about segregation, and for her it was segregation light, you know. She said that I was nowhere near, and you know, and even though she was describing some of the same things that were in the movie, you know, she said it wasn't enough. It was very well done. I just know that there are a multitude of films in the Pan-African Film Festival in Los Angeles, the Urban World Film Festival in New York, the American African-American Film Festival in Miami, that never get distribution because it's not going to be so palatable, so easy to accept, as the harsh, made by people of color, by women, by, by the multitude and diversity of the stories in the country that never get distribution because they actually deal with subject matter that Hollywood never even opens its mind to.
David Simon's white, obviously, but with The Wire, you had it got critical acclaim, but it didn't get into everyone's living room because of the same.
Yeah, it's the same thing, you know. all of a sudden they don't want to see it, you know, because certain assumptions and because of stereotypes. I'll give you a perfect example. I know many people have come up to me and said, you know, hey man, you know, I always heard about The Wire, black folk too, but I don't want to see it. You know, it's the same old thing. We're always the thugs. We're always the criminals. And I said, hold it now. I said, did you see it? I said, you have to see this because it's different. I said, we're the mayor, we're the police commissioner. Yeah, we're the drug dealers too. There's teachers, there's lawyers. There's a more truthful, authentic portrayal of black folk, you know. Even in Treme, people have come up to me saying, oh, why all the black people don't have a job on Treme? I'm like, hold it. I have a job. I'm a musician. I may be a scalawag, but I'm taking care of my kid and my girl. I said, you know, Big Chief is a great carpenter. You have the dentist and my ex-wife who owns her own small business, the bar. What show are you looking at? But what happens is people are so conditioned by formulaic television and formulaic movies that, you know, it's a running joke in the community. You know, if it's a horror movie, the black person is going to get killed in the first reel, you know. You know, if it's the streets, it's always, you know, that's the only way it's the street, you know. People of color are the hoodlums, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, but you bring them reality, and sometimes people don't even recognize reality because they're so conditioned by what media has portrayed. Mm-hmm. If I told people, hey, listen, I'm going to have a sensationalized murder trial of running back, superstar African-American, was killed his ex-wife, who's Caucasian, and the lead prosecutor is going to be a white female with an African-American male that's a prosecutor. He's going to have an Armenian defense attorney with the American Jewish lawyer on the defense team, an old leatherneck, old school, good old boy on his team also. The judge is going to be Asian. The people are like, oh, man, come on. You know, this rainbow coalition. And it's, you know, this O.J. Simpson trial. But, you know, but Hollywood would see it as, oh, man, that's not truthful. That's not real.
What role of yours is your mom most proud of, do you think?
I think they're proud of the work that I'm doing in New Orleans, you know, in real life, trying to redevelop Punch Train Park. You know, as a young couple, they came there, you know, over 50 years ago at the height of segregation. It was the only place for blacks to buy homes. He was a young soldier coming back from World War II. It was just an idea, you know, and it was a real leap of faith for them to purchase a home and create this neighborhood. It was separate but equal. So out of something ugly, their generation made something beautiful. And so here it is 50 years later, where it was an incubator of talent. The first black mayor, Dutch Morial, his son Mark Morial became mayor. And Lisa Jackson, who's the EPA director now, Terrence Blanchard, multi-Grammy award-winning trumpet player and jazz composer, and I dare put myself in that mix, and lawyers and doctors and different leaders in the community. It became an incubator for talent. What, you know, Baldwin Hills is to L.A., what Sweet Auburn is to Atlanta, you know, it was the black working class and middle class thriving. And in their golden years, it was destroyed by Katrina. And I knew that we owed it to their generation to put out a call to action, everybody in my generation, to step up to the plate to rebuild it, you know, so that when they leave this earth, they know what they started and what was the foundation for all their kids to go off and be successful citizens and people of the world isn't lost, and that legacy is passed on. And I think that's the thing they're proudest of, mm-hmm. You know, that work that I'm doing. When it comes to acting, they're just happy I'm working.